You're with SBS Radio.
SBS, a world of difference. You're with NITV Radio, on mobile, online and on radio.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land NITV broadcasts from, the Cammeraygal people of the Guringai Nation and their elders, past and present. We also acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes and clans we broadcast to, from the mountains to the plains, from the desert to the sea, from freshwater to saltwater.
Hello and welcome to NITV Radio. My name is Sharka Pechová and it's my great pleasure to be your host today. Coming up in the program, we start with the 50th episode of our science and technology segment, where we explore the latest scientific discoveries, including a new test to screen newborns for rare genetic disorders that paves the way for earlier diagnosis and treatment. In this segment, we will also learn how the pandemic has affected not just humans, but animals as well. With EJ Barrett, founder of Buying Black, we will hear about this digital business that seeks to help Indigenous entrepreneurs not only share their stories, but also build a thriving business community. And on a positive note, for our native animal, we will have a story about a new federal government initiative aiming to protect Australia's dwindling koala population. But first, let's have a look at the news for today, Friday, 4th of February, 2022.
Australia Day 1972 saw the first Aboriginal embassy erected outside Parliament.
The native title legislation must be amended.
And they've walked this land so many times before anybody came.
I am sorry.
The Northern Territory is introducing biosecurity zones to prevent the spread of COVID-19 in remote communities. Residents in flood-affected communities in South Australia's north are becoming increasingly concerned as roads and rails have been cut off. And in sports, for the first time, Australia will have a dual flag bearers at the Winter Olympics opening ceremony. The Central Land Council has welcomed the federal government's reintroduction of biosecurity zones, which will limit the movement of people in some of the region's remote areas. It comes as the Territory Health Department confirmed a fourth COVID-related death, an elder who passed away in an Alice Springs aged care home. NITV's Sarah Collard.
Hundreds of COVID cases are being recorded every day in the Territory, and many of them are in remote communities. It's being spread largely by people moving from community to community. So now the federal government has used the Biosecurity Act to reintroduce zones which will limit where people can travel.
Les Turner, Central Land Council CEO, says this will be an opportunity to get vaccination rates up to protect the community.
What we ask for in terms of the biosecurity measure is to stop our mob moving around at the moment and to have this window of opportunity to get the vaccination rates up, especially amongst the young.
Federal Minister Greg Hunt said he intervened at the request of the community and the Northern Territory government.
We have worked therefore with both the land councils and the territory government and put in place agreed biosecurity zones, and they've been published and they cover a significant proportion of remote communities within the Northern Territory.
A man aged in his 80s died in the Old Times aged care home in Alice Springs, the Territory's fourth death. Health authorities acknowledge the elderly and the vulnerable carry the heaviest burden, as NITV's Sarah Collard reports.
While some parts of Australia appear to have passed the worst of the Omicron wave, the future is less certain in the Territory. But the land councils hope that blocking most people from coming and going will stem the tide. Movement within specific community wards agreed to with the land councils will still be allowed, but an exemption will be required to travel beyond those zones.
Meanwhile, the ABC reports that many remote Aboriginal communities are being affected by the spread of COVID-19. Some communities reporting they lack resources to deal with the outbreak. The remote community of Palumpa in the Northern Territory reports that COVID-19 patients are forced to isolate in an office that is not equipped to handle high volume of people, let alone sick people. In response to the situation, Aboriginal Health, Legal and Land Councils are calling for a lockdown of Central Australia. Meanwhile, an Indigenous man in his 50s has become the first COVID-19-related death in Queensland's far north. NITV reports that the Torres Strait's Northern Peninsula and Cape York region had, as of yesterday, 447 active COVID-19 cases, including 81 on Thursday Island. The Torres and Cape Hospital and Health Services says that 78% of the eligible population is now fully vaccinated, while 93% of residents have had at least one dose. New South Wales has recorded 31 COVID deaths and 10,698 new infections. There are nearly 2,500 patients being treated in hospital with the virus, with 160 people in intensive care. Victoria is reporting 36 COVID deaths and 11,240 new cases. 707 people are in hospital with the virus, with 79 people in intensive care and 29 patients on ventilators. Meanwhile, residents in flood-affected communities in South Australia's north are becoming increasingly concerned after the big rains cut off road and rail links there. The state's premier travelled to Port Augusta yesterday to thank the town's emergency service workers for their efforts. But further north, communities in the AP Wildlands are growing nervous about dwindling food supplies. Deputy Minister Barnaby Joyce says the federal government is working to get to a better place on aged care. It follows reports on nearly 800 aged care residents having died with COVID-19 since the 1st of July 2021. In recent days, federal aged care minister Richard Colbeck has come under fire for attending the cricket instead of a parliamentary hearing into COVID-19 in aged care homes. When asked if Australia's aged care system is in crisis, Mr. Joyce told the ABC that the government has done an exceptional job.
Nobody wants anybody to die, and it's a tragedy for all families. And we can always, and I see that Greg Hunt, Minister Hunt, and the Chief Medical Officer are putting a task force together to try and come to a better place. And that's what you do. That's what management is about. It's not about perfection, immediate perfection. It's about always striving to do a better job. And that's what any person does in any job.
Contradictory government policies are creating intergenerational inequity within the housing market, according to a new research. A report from the University of South Australia shows that older generations, the silent generations and baby boomers, hold the lion's share of housing properties, which, by default, pushes their younger millennial counterparts to the fringes of the market. The report finds that 68% of boomers owned their own home by the age of 30 to 34, compared with 50% of millennials at the same age. Lead researcher Dr. Bram Lewis says that without the financial means to pay for the housing deposits and stamp duty, millennials are being forced into the rental market.
So in terms of renting, there's also need to be a mind shift towards making it more affordable, you know, for millennials to rent, and within that, you know, have the opportunity to save and actually then become a homeowner.
Former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull says the Morrison government is in plenty of trouble and will struggle to be re-elected in the coming election. It comes after leaked text messages allegedly from former New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian described Mr. Morrison as a horrible person who does not care for people. Mr. Turnbull told the ABC he wasn't surprised by the description.
I wasn't surprised by the content. I was a little bit surprised that they found their way into the public domain. Whoever authorised Mr. Van Onselen to release that did not have Scott Morrison's best interests at heart.
Defence Minister Peter Dutton has defended Mr. Morrison, saying he's doing his best, especially during the pandemic.
I can tell you he puts the interests of this country first and foremost.
Authorities in Western Australia have declared an emergency warning for bushfire near homes in East Rockingham. The Western Australia Department of Fire and Emergency Services reported the fire on Thursday afternoon, saying the spread was out of control and unpredictable. The department has advised residents to leave for a safer place as their lives and properties are in danger. The flames have now been brought under control by the firefighters and downgraded to a watch and act warning. And to sports now. Another promising sign that the arts and culture sector is reviving despite being hard hit by the pandemic. Competitors are taking to the water in Sydney this weekend to celebrate the Sydney Lunar Festival. For the first time since 2020, 1,250 paddlers will compete in 72 races in what is the largest race event of its kind in the Southern Hemisphere. Before the race begin, Taoist monks will perform a blessing of the waters, and red paint will be dabbed on the dragon's head of a traditional style boat in a ritual set to awaken the dragons. Sydney Councillor Robert Cook says the festival is taking place over 16 days.
Throughout the festival, there'll be community performances from Chinese, Vietnamese, Korean and Thai communities, as well as dragon boat races, lunar feasts and art exhibitions. And this year, to mark the year of the rat, we'll be launching a larger-than-life rat lantern.
United States government officials are making clear their stance on human rights abuses ahead of the Beijing Winter Olympics. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, citing the genocide of some 1 million Uyghurs in China's far western Xinjiang province. Ms. Pelosi says she's rallying her support of athletes, but supports a diplomatic boycott.
When you talk about the Uyghurs and the camps that these people are sent to and the rest, when we talk about genocide, that would be enough justification to oppose what the PRC is doing. But it's not the only reason. What it does is say to American workers, you must compete with slave labor.
The opening ceremony of the 2022 Beijing Winter Olympics gets underway tonight. Aerial skier Laura Peel and figure skater Brendan Carey have been named Australia's flag bearers for the Beijing 2022 opening ceremony. This will be the first time Australia will have dual flag bearers at a Winter Olympics opening ceremony, as happened in the Summer Games team in Tokyo, when basketball star Patty Mills and swimmer Kate Campbell shared the responsibility for Australia. Peel and Carey are both competing in their third Olympic Games. And let's have a look at the weather now. Broome can expect a shower or two and a possible storm with the tops of 33 degrees. Perth, very hot and mostly sunny with 39 degrees. Adelaide, sunny and 27. Melbourne, mostly sunny and the tops of 25 degrees. Hobart, partly cloudy and 20 degrees. Albury-Wodonga, sunny with the tops of 27. Canberra, partly cloudy and 20 degrees. Wollongong, shower or two and 22. Sydney, similar conditions and 25 degrees. Brisbane, a shower or two and 26 degrees. Townsville can expect some showers, possibility of a storm with the tops of 32 degrees. Cairns, showers and a possible storm, 33 degrees. Darwin, also some showers and a possible storm and 31 degrees. Alice Springs today is sunny with the tops of 27. And Torres Strait Islands are partly cloudy with showers, tops of 30 degrees. And that's all from the news today.
TV Radio. Share our stories on Facebook.
You're listening to NITV Radio, and it's time for our first song today. Here is a song, Higher, by Bunjera. He described his song as an ode to fun, celebration, to happiness. So let's enjoy Higher.
Keep taking me higher.
Was Higher by Bunjera, a Bunjalung man who debuted in 2020 with a song called Missing You. Now our regular segment on science and technology with Bertrand Tungandame and journalist Ray Johnston.
And now it's that time of the week to explore the latest developments in science and technology with Wiradjuri woman and science and technology editor Ray Johnston. Welcome to NITV Radio again, Ray.
Thanks for having me back. Always great to be here.
Now, this time around, we start with something really amazing. A new test to screen newborns for rare genetic disorders paves the way for earlier diagnosis and treatment.
Yeah, this is really great. A newly developed test to screen for three rare genetic disorders in newborns at the same time has been made, and it works really well, and it's going to start to be included in the heel prick test that they already do on newborns. So this screening will mean earlier diagnosis and treatment, which paves the way for the three disorders to be added to that screening process for the first time. The three disorders that they're testing for, they create varying degrees of intellectual disability, autism, behavioural problems and seizures as well. About 135 babies are born with one of these disorders each year in Australia, but they're not currently included in the newborn screening programs, and many of them go undiagnosed in the first year of their life. Tests are only performed now on those that are suspected of having the disorders. And then it's only if that's recognised by the child's doctor and then referred to appropriate testing. So yeah, this wouldn't be the case with newborn screening. They'd be able to pick it up immediately, which is great news for all those kids that would be able to get into treatment immediately.
Yeah, no, that's good. So the earlier they can treat them, the better for their actually a health growing up. That's a really a good and amazing development.
Yeah, now, it is.
Yeah. And now we're going to something that concerns us all, but then going to lockdowns and pets that, from lockdown pets to rules roaming our cities, the pandemic impacted animals too. We all just spoke about our human beings, but it goes way, way, way beyond just the human species.
Yeah, and the way that it's affected animals as well is really surprising. You know, COVID-19, it brought the human world to crisis. And there's a new study that's looked at how non-human animals, because we are animals too, are also connected to the pandemic in three significant ways that emerged really early on in the pandemic, actually. So first of all, the fact is that COVID-19 is a zoonotic disease. It reached humans via non-human animal hosts, and animal geographers and others have cast light on the spread and control of animal diseases and on the almost animal, including the microorganism. So there's been a whole range of studies opened up in that area that people are looking at now as well. Second of all, the outbreak is understood to have transferred to humans in a market setting, you know, selling live animals in Wuhan, China. And disputes over the source of the outbreak, they've highlighted the many problems that the sales of animals and the commodification of animals creates. It's a really interesting topic about what impacts it could have on humans and on other animals for us to continue to do things like this. And third, social restrictions. They've seen city streets empty of people in some areas of the world for really long periods of time. And in those quiet moments, unexpected animals entered cities or have become to behave differently. You know, the animals that were already in the cities that relied on human interaction, they've started to behave differently as well. So this also raises questions about, you know, who and what belongs in a city and what role they play. So there's been all studies popping up in that area as well. You know, the lives of human and non-human animals are deeply connected. And the person who wrote about this study in particular that looks at these three points says that we need to do more, you know, relational and political work to more deeply understand those connections between humans and other animals and the implications of those connections as well. So interesting stuff on the horizon, that's for sure.
It's interesting, actually. We actually lead people to think differently from how they view animals and pets and our own well-being. Well, we're not alone. We have to also consider the other species that around us. Very good research, because no one would think
Absolutely.
About this kind of left of field kind of concern. Yeah.
We had no need to think about them before. You know, the pandemic has forced us to consider things and thinking in new ways that we hadn't even thought of before. And that's the beauty of science as well. You know, it provides us an avenue to be able to critically look at the way the world works and come up with some answers and solutions.
Yeah. And we stay in the animal realm with now citizens being recruited to unlock the secret lives of echidnas. So
yes, this is a wonderful project. So researchers at the University of Adelaide's Environment Institute and members of the general public have recorded the largest number of echidna sightings across Australia, and it's going to really aid in the conservation of this animal. And in Echidna Conservation Science Initiative, which it's called, they call it Echidna CSI, we are essentially recruited as the general public to submit echidna sightings and scats as well, which is echidna poo. And that helps researchers track echidna population changes, and it also engages the public in scientific research and in echidna conservation as well, which is really lovely. And we can all do this. We can all download the free Echidna CSI app on your smartphone, and then you submit photos and information about echidna sightings. And you can also learn how to collect the scats, the feces, for molecular analysis of echidna diet and gut health, reproductive health, and any kind of other stresses that echidnas are going through. Now, since this project began in 2017, this is an amazing fact, more than 11,000 members of the public have downloaded the app and submitted 12,000 echidna sightings from across Australia. And this is equivalent to 25% of all of the echidna sightings listed in the Atlas of Living Australia, which covers more than the past 100 years of data. So since 2017, this app has recorded a quarter of all of echidna sightings in the last 100 years, which just shows how well it's working. And it's important to have this app as well, because the short-beaked echidna, it's one of the most widespread native animals in Australia. It is in such diverse environments, from bushland to snow and desert and tropical regions. And this has made studying echidnas in the wild really problematic. It's really difficult. It's impossible for researchers to collect such a large number of sightings and scats. So taking a citizen science approach, we've been able to recruit thousands of members of the public to collect that data for them, over large areas of land, over large time scales. And some interesting things have come out of it, because researchers expected most sightings to occur close to populated areas because we're relying on people to collect the information. But they didn't anticipate as many echidna sightings either within or immediately surrounding all the major cities in Australia. And this, it raises a number of concerns, because there's very little appropriate habitat or food sources available for echidnas in these environments. And it also increases the risk of echidnas, you know, being hurt, being hit by cars, that kinds of thing. And, you know, unlike the common ring-tailed possum or koalas, and in some cases even the platypus, echidnas haven't been considered an urban native species before. So the researchers are suggesting that because of the findings of this study, there is a need to consider echidnas when we're establishing policies around biodiversity in cities. Okay. So if you don't have the app yet, get the app, get the Echidna CSI app. And if you come across an echidna, pop it in the app.
No, it sounds really good. You just mentioned something that I've never heard before. The citizen scientists, you know, we've known citizen journalists now, people going around collecting stories and all that. And now citizen scientists who've actually done more than, as you said, centuries worth of, who've collected centuries worth of data in just a matter of a really short time span. So it means we can all contribute to the evolution of science.
That's right.
Yeah.
Citizen science is fantastic. You know, citizen science is used in almost all fields of science, particularly astronomy. There's a lot of citizen science projects. A lot of things in the stars have been discovered because of general members of the public, not because of trained scientists. So citizen science projects, highly recommend getting involved.
Yeah, definitely. I'll get the app and maybe start, scouting the area around me and see if I can, put in my own little contribution.
Please do.
Yeah. And now one that, will make some people very curious about its development. So how Aussie researchers have actually suggested that cannabis-related content on TikTok is prevalent and may influence the perceptions of the use of cannabis.
Yeah, I think this is something that's important for people to be aware of. And I know that we're at a period of the time where, cannabis is being used for medicinal reasons. It's being legalized in many areas of the world. But it's worth noting that that is under controlled environments and among the adult population. So when it comes to cannabis use amongst teenagers, researchers are concerned. And they're concerned that they're being exposed to videos on social media, particularly on TikTok at the moment, that are portraying cannabis use as funny and entertaining rather than something that is a medicinal use or potentially risky. And the research, it analysed 881 publicly available videos to work out how cannabis-related content was seen by users. And the research found that 54% of those videos had a positive sentiment and were viewed more than 417 million times, which is a lot. And only 24 of those 881 videos, or 2.7%, warned audiences of the dangers associated with high-frequency cannabis use. And the researchers say that this is concerning because this exposure, it can influence an adolescent's attitudes and potentially lead to problematic cannabis use, which poses the risk of mental health issues or neuropsychological decline. Cannabis remains one of the most widely used substances internationally among young people, and it has been linked to an increased risk of depression and suicide in young adulthood. And there's over 1 million young Australians using TikTok. So the researchers are shouting from the rooftops that there is an urgent need for effective age restrictions or warning banners to be placed on publicly available videos depicting substance abuse. And it's worth noting that TikTok has recently made moves to protect young people from risky behaviour online, including removing hashtags explicitly referencing substance abuse. But the videos the researchers are talking about are still publicly available. So awareness needs to be spread and a little bit more work needs to be done.
Yeah, definitely. While I support a little bit of control of this, I also think they should have a balance between really protecting people and freedom of information at the same time. So this
absolutely
is a balance they should try and strike. Well, Ray Johnston, thank you so much for bringing us again exciting developments in the realm of your daily work, which is normal to you, but novelty to us and most of our audiences, actually. Thank you so much and have a great weekend.
Thank you for having me. You too.
That was Bertrand Tungandama in conversation with journalist Ray Johnston. You can find this segment on our webpage, sbs.com.au/NITV Radio.
Visit sbs.com.au/NITV Radio.
Our second song today is called For My Titas and is by Varka. It's a title song of her debut album released in 2020, and since then, Varka has already made a name for herself, performing at a number of iconic venues. Varka's track Our Lives Matter and her collaboration with Brother Derby on I Can't Breathe, highlighting Black deaths in custody, remain the unofficial anthems of Australia's Black Lives Matter protests. But here is Varka's song For My Titas.
Black sister, where you going? How you doing? Where you been? I ain't seen you on the scene for a couple of weeks. By your means, stay on your road.
For My Titas by Varka. Coming up next, EJ Barrett, founder and owner of Buying Black, in conversation with NITV Radio's Bertrand Tungandame. Buying Black was the recipient of the Indigenous Digital Inventiveness Award at the 2021 Indigenous Business Month. Buying Black is described as an online business aiming to provide a platform for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander entrepreneurs to share their stories and build a bustling, interconnected business community. But as AJ Barrett says, Buying Black is more than just a digital platform.
Buying Black's a digital enterprise that supports Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander businesses by promoting their products and services digitally. You do that by having a website, we have a social media footprint, and we also have a digital online museum for NFT, digital marketing. We call it the blockchain, so it's really fundamentally just about blockchain technology.
And when you say NFT, well, for non-computer literate or lay people like myself, what does that stand for?
NFTs are the digital currency. Bitcoin is probably the most common one that people recognize, and there's Ethereum as well. So we're creating these pathways for Indigenous businesses to follow to enter that market. It's really new, but very popular. And I think it's the future when it comes to digital art form and other digital products. So that's why Buying Black has done some research in the area, and we've created our own online gallery to start sharing work from our Buying Black members. We have a strategy where we're asking Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander businesses to register with Buying Black. We call that our Buying Black community, and we promote those businesses through storytelling online and digitally.
So basically, you're weaving traditional storytelling with a cutting-edge technology. And this has earned you a prestigious award, the Indigenous Business Month Digital Inventiveness Award 2021, which is a great acknowledgement of your work.
To win this award is exciting, but very humbling as well, because the people that have started Indigenous Business Month and the judges and everyone involved, they're respected business leaders in this country, and to be recognised by their mob is pretty special. And so it's very humbling for this initiative to be selected by that group. And I also know that there's other businesses out there that are doing some pretty great work, pretty amazing work. And to be selected from that cohort is pretty special and humbling. So I think it's a great opportunity for the Buying Black community. Of course, awards like this not only celebrates us, but also acknowledges that we're out there doing the hard yards. We're out there empowering the Indigenous economy, and to be recognised for that is pretty special.
Now, you said you have an online gallery. Can you describe to us, to our listeners, how does it look like and how does it feel? The feel of it online displayed there.
It's an online gallery where we're inviting Aboriginal businesses to show their work. It sits in the digital space, and it's very popular, but it's very new. So it's a great opportunity for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, because we're so creative, and I think we can be a success in this new digital arena.
Your business has a holistic approach to online marketing, promotion, and social media, has a social media footprint, does podcasting, videos. You pretty much do everything.
Yeah, at the core of it, though, is with blockchain technology. When you look at blockchain technology, at the core of it is that a person's work is protected. When you register your artwork through blockchain technology, your digital signature is attached to that piece of work and can never be removed. We see a lot of fake Indigenous art, and we see a lot of Indigenous art being ripped off. With blockchain technology, that doesn't happen. The technology ensures that your work is protected. And even though you might sell your work online, if that work gets sold again, still be remunerated for that. It's a great initiative to protect Indigenous artists' work.
Well, and there you've just suddenly solved a problem that seemed intractable for decades. And that's about intellectual property for Indigenous artists.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Congratulations.
And there's mob on in this digital world that are spending a lot of money on art. So I think it's a great opportunity for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander artists and creatives.
Now, I hear you're working with Indigenous businesses, but you also want to bring on board other stakeholders, including government agencies and non-for-profits and so on.
Yeah, like we really want it to be a community. So Buying Black, at the core of it, is the businesses. But us Indigenous businesses cannot survive without our clients and customers, plus our other stakeholders, such as state and federal, government agencies. Yeah. who you know, provide a lot of support to us as well.
And EJ, before I let you go, just a final word to wrap up this conversation.
Yeah, I'd love to acknowledge all the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander business owners out there. Some days are pretty tough. So I hope that they see the work that's happening around the place and that they feel that they're acknowledged and respected and supported. To members of the Buying Black community, we like to say that we see you, and we celebrate you, and keep up the good work.
That was EJ Barrett, founder and owner of Buying Black, the recipient of the Indigenous Digital Inventiveness Award at the 2021 Indigenous Business Month. EJ was talking to Bertrand Tungandame.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
The federal government says it will spend another $50 million over 4 years aimed at helping to protect Australia's dwindling koala population. The money will underpin a national koala recovery plan promised after the devastating 2020 bushfires. But some environment groups claim it won't be enough to save the iconic Australian animal from extinction, unless more is done to address climate change. Claire Slattery reports.
They give you a good cuddle, don't they?
they got good claws.
In an election year, photo opportunities like these could be considered a politician's natural habitat. At Queensland's Australia Zoo, Koala Lily received a hug from the Prime Minister before Scott Morrison announced a promise of $50 million in funding to save her species.
We love to throw our arms around koalas, and they love to throw their arms around us when we get to have a cuddle. And what this is about is continuing to throw our arms around our koala population and care for them in the way that I believe all Australians would want us to. And that's a window into the broader wildlife population that we need to support.
Australia Zoo's Robert Irwin, the son of the late television personality and wildlife conservationist Steve Irwin, says koalas are under unprecedented threat.
They are on the thin edge of the wedge, and so any kind of support that we can get is greatly, greatly appreciated and very, very needed. Our environment is suffering at the moment, and so any steps that we can make toward a brighter future to make positive change There's a lot of work that needs to be done, and it's really good to see that our beautiful icon species are going to be better protected.
The largest portion of the funding will go towards habitat preservation. Money will also be spent on initiatives to reduce disease and provide veterinary training. Federal Environment Minister Susan Lee says the package will also support work with Australia's National Scientific Research Agency, the CSIRO, to calculate how many koalas are left in the wild.
A national census, if you like, a national monitoring program, because we have to build the baseline data that tells us how many koalas we have, where they are, and what the best interventions are to protect them.
Estimates vary on how many wild koalas there are, but some figures suggest as few as 100,000 remain. The World Wildlife Fund says koala numbers have fallen by about half in Queensland and New South Wales since the year 2001 because of deforestation, attacks from introduced species, disease, drought, and bushfires. The fund's Dr. Stuart Blanche says 2020's black summer bushfires wiped out more than 60,000 of the species.
When the world thinks Australia, it thinks koalas. And people are horrified around the world when they know that our koalas are heading towards extinction by 2050. It puzzles me that I can find more toy koalas in souvenir shops than I can find wild koalas in the forest in eastern Australia. I don't think Australians want that to be the case. And I think as we try to attract more people to visit Australia after COVID, international tourists want to see koalas and other wildlife in the wild. That's why we encourage the Australian government to work with the Queensland and New South Wales governments to commit to doubling the number of koalas by 2050.
While the federal government's funding pledge has largely been welcomed by environment groups, they also say more needs to be done. The World Wildlife Fund's Stuart Blanche again.
Money is needed, absolutely. But it makes no sense if we continue to allow their homes, which are forests, to be bulldozed and logged at the same time. So we are asking the Federal Environment Minister, Susan Lay, to now list koalas in Queensland and New South Wales as endangered.
The koala package comes just a day after the government announced a record $1 billion in funding for the Great Barrier Reef. Some say the announcements are an effort by the coalition to boost its environment credentials ahead of the federal election. But Labor says the government is still continuing to overlook the biggest threat to the environment, climate change. The federal opposition leader is Anthony Albanese.
We all think koalas are cuddly, and we all want to save them. But guess what? You need to take action on climate change if you're going to save koalas. You need to take action on climate change if you're going to protect the Great Barrier Reef. And in yesterday's announcement and media release on the Great Barrier Reef, the government didn't use the term climate change. Not once. It's just extraordinary that this government just doesn't get it. It's all announcement, no delivery.
The $50 million will support the National Koala Recovery Plan promised after the Black Summer bushfires and will be rolled out over the next 4 years.
That was a story produced by Claire Slattery for SBS News. And we have the last song of today. It's by King Stingray, which is an indie pop rock from Darwin. The band performs in English and Yolongu Mata. King Stingray released their debut single, Hey Wanahaka, in October 2020. But now we are going to listen to their new song, Melkumana. That was Melkumana by King Stingray. The Yolongu Trio says the single is about the power of passing on knowledge through stories and songs. And that brings us to the end of the show today. You are with NITV Radio and my name is Sharka Pechová. Have a great weekend.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.